The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the September-October issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to start today right on with birthdays. October. Kansas City Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce, he turned 33 on October 5th. October 7th, San Francisco Giants third baseman Evan Longoria turned 37 years old. On the 16th of October, Sue Bird, she turned 42. WNBA legend, enjoy retirement. Coming up, October 21st, Kansas City Royals star pitcher Zach Greinke is 39. And finally, October 31st, Halloween, Manchester United England national team forward Marcus Rashford turns 25. Your headline goes here. Are you interested in sports journalism? Are you a kid between the ages of 8 and 13? Do you live in the United States or Canada? We're looking for the next group of SI Kids kid reporters who report on sports in their communities. If you're interested and applying, have an adult email kidreporter@si.com with your name, age, location, three story ideas, a short writing sample, and an explanation of why you want to be a kid reporter. We may not be able to reply to all applications. Warm-up, hot take, whoa, by Skip Shoremore. Jeez, would you look at that? And now they expect us to care about the Major League Baseball playoffs. In case you've been living under a rock, the image above came from the James Webb Space Telescope launched last December and currently orbiting our sun. I'm saying our sun because after looking at the first batch of web images released in July, everything about our little solar system suddenly seems quaint. This photo is of SMAX J0723.3-7327, a cluster of galaxies famous for its beauty and easy-to-remember name. See those little tiny orange and white swirls that take up just a few millimeters each on this page? They look like galaxies because they are galaxies, or were. Our own galaxy, the Milky Way, is 600,000 trillion miles across. I'm not even going to tell you how many football fields that is. The Milky Way contains hundreds of billions of planets. Only about 100 billion human beings have ever existed. Each tiny dot in that photo could have easily contained more planets than have ever been people. Do you think any of them hit 750 career home runs? I have to use the past tense because that photo shows those galaxies as they were 4.6 billion years ago. It took the light captured in the picture that long to travel to our solar system. The Earth is only about 4.543 billion years old. You're looking at something as it was before our entire planet formed, even before Tom Brady was drafted. Where some might see our ultimate cosmic insignificance, I see a huge opportunity for the expansion of the KIPP brand. These images could be the start of a brand new era of discovery, and the first step in finding something is seeing it. One thing Webb will allow scientists to see more clearly is exoplanets, worlds outside our solar system. Webb records the light that reflects off a planet and then breaks apart that data to estimate the chemical composition of the atmosphere. Pretty wild, huh? In theory, this telescope could detect Earth-like clouds around a planet trillions of miles away. Imagine it. Entire worlds full of potential new SI Kids readers. Maybe on some of those worlds, the sentient species has a Yoda-esque 400-year-old child. Most of you kids dissed this magazine around 16. We just have to figure out how to broadcast my columns so it's not 4.6 billion years old when it arrives in their alien inboxes. Lest you think I'm being geocentric, I'm sure there's plenty these planets have to teach me as well. Let's take an already discovered exoplanet. For example, TRAPPIST-1D is 40 light years from Earth and about a third of its size. It's so named for being the third planet orbiting TRAPPIST-1, an ultra-cool red dwarf in the Aquarius constellation. Now, I'm not here to tell you that aliens exist and live on TRAPPIST-1D. They may be there, but I'm definitely not breaking that news in the eighth paragraph of a bi-monthly column. Imagine the sports implication, however, of a habitable planet orbiting a small, cool sun. It takes 4 days for the world to complete its orbit of TRAPPIST-1. That makes me 912 years old on TRAPPIST-1D, and I could get my learner's permit. The sky on TRAPPIST-1D varied from a day that's not brighter than our twilight to a night much brighter than ours. They could play baseball all night with no stadium lights. These hypothetical TRAPPISTians probably have eyes that evolved to perceive objects in low light. They're going to totally dominate us in the interglacial Olympics. Are we doing enough to combat the incoming TRAPPIST-1D archery threat? And that's just one exoplanet. NASA has identified 8,819 candidates, each with their own unique atmospheres, topographies, and potentially bat and ball games. By the way, if the TRAPPISTians or any other alien residents are monitoring Earth media, I want to clarify something. We come in peace. We're not afraid of a challenge. Just because you might have super eyes or five arms doesn't mean we're going to concede the anti-gravity basketball championship. We just want to know what we're up against so we can brief LeBron. Anyway, if you're an extraterrestrial basketball-playing species looking to challenge Earth, send first contact to kip.shoremore@si.com. Skip the cornfield landings and come straight to this planet's smartest member, me. I'll be awaiting your transmissions. Regular engagement. Continue warm-up. Kip answers your questions. Levi writes, "Hey, Kip, I know most professional sports teams have mascots, and I was wondering who your favorite mascots are." Hey, Levi, I really shouldn't reveal a ranking this important on the letters page. I feel like my top five mascots could easily fill up 2 to 4 pages in the back of the magazine. In fact, I can't believe they didn't pick me for pages 46 and 47. Players with the same name. We may be running out of ideas. Anyway, I gravitate toward the mascots that don't make any sense or fit the team concept at all. Number 1, the Philly Fanatic. Number 2, Phoenix Suns Gorilla. Number 3, Stanford Tree. Number 4, Yuppie. Number 5, Western Kentucky Big Red. Patrick writes, "I think that errors should not be given as often in the Major League Baseball. Just the other day, I saw an MVP candidate track down a foul ball toward the stands, reach over the fence, and drop it. He was charged with an error when really any other player couldn't have made the play look as easy." I appreciate you protecting the identity of the MVP candidate who dropped the ball, Patrick. That shows your commitment to not taking errors seriously, and you shouldn't. Errors, after all, only measures a fielder's ability to catch the balls they reach, but is more important to get to balls in the first place. That emphasis has led to holistic fielding stats like ultimate zone rating and total zone runs. According to total zone runs, Orioles third baseman Brooks Robinson prevented more opposing scoring through his fielding than any other player in history, 293 runs. He also made 264 errors in the Hall of Fame. Simone writes, "If Steph Curry played in the 80s or 90s, would he still be as dominant as he is now?" Simone, you're asking the tough questions. It's hard for me to imagine Curry in the 80s or 90s. In fact, it's hard for me to imagine the 80s or 90s at all. The problem with sending a trailblazing player back in time is how close-minded the coaches would be. In the 80s, Curry wouldn't have been allowed to shoot 600 threes a season. In the 90s, he'd be a good but maybe not the primary scoring option. Just imagine Curry passing an open trays to throw the ball to Shaq in the low post. Send your question to Kip at kip.shomore@si.com. Game plans, Major League Baseball. You don't have to be rich in baseball, but it sure helps. Cost of being boss. Looking at the Major League Baseball standings at most points this season, it was hard to notice that the three best teams, the Dodgers, Mets, and Yankees, reside in the United States' two biggest cities. So the Houston Astros in the mix, and the four most dominant teams were each from one of the country's four most populous areas. Baseball, the only North American sport without a salary cap, is starting to look like European soccer, in which the richest markets attract the richest owners who pay for the best players. It didn't used to be this way. As recently as 2010, the Mets and Dodgers were in fourth place, and the Yankees lost out in the AL East to the Tampa Bay Rays, whose opening day payroll, $72 million, was less than half of New York Yankees' $206 million. The big market teams were in flux. The Dodgers owners, Frank and Jamie McCourt, had just begun divorce proceedings. Yankees boss George Steinbrenner died that summer, leaving the team to his children. And Mets owner Fred Wolpon's hundreds of millions of dollars tied up in Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. Since then, the Dodgers sold to an ownership group led by Lakers legend Magic Johnson, and billionaire Steve Cohen bought the Mets. The top three payrolls in baseball, the Dodgers, $265 million, Mets, $261 million, and the Yankees, $251 million. Baseball's bio-coastal realignment, however, is not just a question of more money, but smarter money. In the early 1990s, the Mets and Yankees spent aggressively and got middling to disastrous results. Small market teams could gain an advantage in player evaluation and development, but the rosters of baseball's new big three are littered with homegrown stars: Aaron Judge, Pete Alonso, Clayton Kershaw, complemented by can't-miss superstar free agents like Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, and Freddie Freeman. All three teams resisted the urge to raise their farm systems in pursuit of Juan Soto. After all, they still hope Soto will become a free agent one day, when he'll just cost money, of which they have plenty. Baseball's always been rigged. The rich teams are just getting smarter about rigging it. The wildest card yet. While baseball's franchises have become more unequal, the league has pushed the playoff format to be more egalitarian. The prospect of three teams spending five times the cheapest franchise's payroll would be more dire for most of baseball's history, when the playoffs consisted of just two or four teams. Under the new collective bargaining agreement, 12 teams qualify for a four-round playoff. There weren't 12 teams this season with a 26-man payroll above $100 million. So, inevitably, at least one mid- to small-market team will make the tournament. And baseball's playoffs are notoriously a crapshoot. The best teams prevail over 162 games, but in a 3, 5, or 7-game series, a hot pitching staff can pull an upset. That team, the New York franchises, quintupled in spending this season. It was the Baltimore Orioles, who spent most of the season in wild card contention. Game plans, NBA. Stars want to play together, but is that an ideal situation? Navigating the NBA's Avengers era. How important is star power in the NBA? Consider this. No team has ever won the league without at least one Hall of Fame player on its roster. For recent champs whose players aren't not yet eligible, we're counting obvious shoe-ins like Steph Curry and LeBron James. So it must stand to reason that the more superstars you have, the better off you are, right? Maybe. The 1999 Sports Illustrated noted the trend of teams trying to find a second elite player when the headline on the magazine's NBA preview issue was the power of two. In 2010, three became the new two. That was the year LeBron James hit free agency and decided to play in Miami alongside his pal Dwayne Wade. For good measure, that dynamic duo reached out to the free agent center and future Hall of Famer Chris Bosh and convinced him to also move to Florida. Just like that, the NBA had its original big three. The Heat won two titles in 4 years, then James returned to Cleveland as a free agent in 2014. The Cavs already had Kyrie Irving, and they decided to embrace the big three formula by trading for center Kevin Love. 2 years later, they won their first NBA title. Soon, acquiring as many big names as possible became all the rage, and it became easier as players used their leverage to reach out to their pals and essentially function as general managers. The strategy isn't foolproof, though. Most infamously, the Nets paired James Harden with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in 2021. They were mediocre when they were all healthy, and before long, Harden had been shipped to Philadelphia. Acquiring so many big names requires devoting an enormous amount of money to a few players, leaving little for all important role players. And if a team succeeds in composing a roster of megastars, its coach has to figure out a way to get them all enough shots to keep them happy. No matter how many stars you have, there's still only one ball. In 2019, the Raptors upset the mighty Warriors to win the NBA title with Kawhi Leonard as the only player who averaged at least 17 points per game. But the rest of the roster was filled out with a steady veteran point guard, shooters who could create floor spacing, and big men who could protect the rim. 2 years later, the Bucks won it all with Giannis Antetokounmpo leading the way, surrounded by a balanced crew of shooters, rebounders, and defenders. In each case, the team had the flexibility and assets to build a team that complemented its singular talent. That's the road the Celtics are taking. Jason Tatum is a 24-year-old generational talent, and he's at the center of everything Boston does. His running mate, Jaylen Brown, had a breakout year last season, averaging 23.6 points per game. After that, no other Celtics scored more than 14.4 points per game, but they had six others averaging at least 9.7. Of course, building around one person has its risks. What if he gets hurt? What if the opposing team figures out how to stop him? Over the summer, Durant asked for a trade and was linked to Boston in a deal that would have cost the team Brown and set in on the road that the Nets took. Many Celtics fans were understandably happy when Durant rescinded his demand and the three C's remained intact. Three or one? James above in this picture, top of page 45, above, and his crew won a pair of titles in Miami, while Giannis below took the buck to the promised land. Same name game, what are the odds? Elias needs an alias. Some teams have a type of player they like to draft. The Vancouver Canucks take it further. In 2017, they picked Swedish center Elias Pettersson on the right with the number 5 pick. It worked out. Pettersson was the rookie of the year. So it makes sense they jump at the chance to draft another Elias Pettersson. Literally. This year, they took Elias Pettersson, a defenseman, at number 80. They're both Swedish. They're both listed at 6'2", and they both shoot left-handed. But they're not related, and they had never met before the draft. Will these two Canucks be able to make a name for themselves and each other? Here are some past homonyms, teammates, who made it work. These teammates with the same first and last names proved the necessity of numbers. Keeping up with the Joneses. The Mets already had a right-handed starting pitcher, Bobby Jones, when they acquired left-handed relief pitcher Bobby Jones from the Rockies before the 2000 season. The old saying turned out to be, two Bobby Joneses are better than one. The Mets reached the World Series in 2000. the Padres perhaps hoping to harness that Y2K Bobby Jones magic featured both pitchers in 2002, but the team finished in last place. Michael in New York. The Canucks waited 5 years to draft their second Elias Pettersson. The New York Jets waited a few hours to grab a second Michael Carter in 2021. They took a North Carolina running back, bottom of that name, at number 107. Then they nabbed Duke defensive back Michael Carter at number 154, according to GM Joe Douglas. When he asked the scout which Michael Carter he wanted, the scout replied simply, yes. Luckily, the defensive Carter wears a Carter 2 on his jersey. Like father, like son. Okay, this one isn't particularly coincidental. Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. played together on the Mariners in 1990 and 1991. And yes, they're related. The Griffeys made all sorts of Major League Baseball history as the first father and son duo, including back-to-back hits in their first game. From a naming perspective, however, the move began the process of dad going from being simply Ken Griffey to Ken Griffey Sr. as his son eclipsed him on the field. Men in Soccer, Part 3. Ken Griffey Jr. already had a generational suffix in his name. The Michael Carters don't play at the same time, but Tal Ben-Haim, born 1982, did share the pitch with Tal Ben-Haim, born 1899, no relation. The older center, back on the bottom, and the younger winger player, together for Maccabi Tel Aviv and Team Israel, but they devised two solutions. The elder became Tal Ben-Haim 1, while the Tal Ben-Haim 2 spelled their name Ben-Kaim on his jersey. Carlos Alcaraz, tennis. For nearly 20 years, the same three men have dominated tennis, winning a combined 63 majors. Now one Spanish team is ready to give them a challenge. Carlos Alcaraz had done it. He had just been beaten five opponents to win the Barcelona Open tennis tournament, his second being title in less than a month. He had cracked the top 10 in at the ATP Tour rankings. As a Spaniard, he had used the home crowd support as a source of encouragement and not pressure, and now it was time to celebrate. Alcaraz left the clay court he had dominated all week and headed to the back of the Real Club de Tenis Barcelona, the oldest tennis club in Spain, where the tournament has been held for almost a century. Without breaking his stride, still wearing his shirt, shorts, and socks, and a wide smile on his face, he dove headfirst into the club's swimming pool. Shows here Alcaraz in action. Within reach, Alcaraz's game combines blistering power with the ability to cover serious ground. Soon, Alcaraz was joined in the water by dozens of ball boys and ball girls. The image of the tournament champion frolicking in the water alongside these kids made for a viral video. But it was easy to forget. Alcaraz was swimming with kids his own age. He was a superstar athlete in age, closer in age to the teenage court attendants than the men he had just spent the week beating. For almost 20 years, three men have dominated men's tennis the way red dominates the color scheme of fire trucks. Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, and Novak Djokovic have won more than 60 major titles combined, batting around records as if they were tennis balls. It has made for a golden era in the sport, but it's left a lot of other players obscured by their shadow. Now, finally, a young new star had broken through. Hola, Carlos Alcaraz. The year of Carlito. By April, it was clear that 2022 was going to mark the year that Alcaraz crashed the tennis party. The year of Carlito, the Spanish newspaper Marca put it, referring to Alcaraz by his nickname. The full arrival of Alcaraz came a few weeks later when he played at the Madrid Open tournament. It was the same week he turned 19. On May 5th, his actual birthday, Alcaraz beat the great Spanish champion Nadal in three hard-fought sets. The next day, he returned and beat Djokovic, then the number one ranked player, in three sets. The day after that, proving his durability is as advanced as his tennis skills, he beat Alexander Zverev of Germany 6-3, 6-1 to win the title. One day I hope I can play like you, Zverev, age 25, joked. Then he turned serious. It's pretty clear the future has arrived. He's right. He isn't just that Alcaraz wins, it's how. Like all the greats in one sport, he marries offense with defense. In tennis terms, that means hitting the ball with forcefulness and aggression, blasting winners beyond the reach of the opponent. It also means chasing and getting to balls that would be unreachable by other players. And Alcaraz does it all with nonstop energy and self-belief. The way he shows character when he plays, that is what impresses me the most, says Nadal. He goes for the big shots in the big moments, which is not always easy. He is special for sure. Corpus pedigree. Alcaraz was born in 2003 in the city of El Palmar, an athletic kid he took to many sports but connected with tennis, which he first started to play at age four. Why? For one, his father is a local tennis club director. Alcaraz also says that he has always liked tennis's combination of power with accuracy. Also, he says in English that is improving as fast as his tennis. I'm glad to be one on the court and find solutions to problems myself. Growing up fast. Ask Alcaraz about the non-tennis highlights of his year, and he doesn't talk about lavish parties or sightseeing. Instead, it's jet skiing with his friends or hanging out with his two younger brothers. His hobbies include following soccer, he roots for Real Madrid, listening to reggaeton, and watching movies. When he watches his favorite series, Suits, it doubles as a way for him to practice English. And he rejects the suggestion that he is giving anything up to be this good at a sport. For me, it's not a sacrifice at all, he says. I love playing tennis. I love what I do now. It's a privilege. Alcaraz often answers questions by saying we, including his entire training team, rather than I. He often gives credit to the players who came before him and serve as both opponents and inspirations. I always watch videos of Federer, Djokovic, and Rafa, he says. He says his best friend in tennis is Pablo Carreño Busta, a veteran who turned 31 this year. Celia admits that fast rise means that suddenly he finds himself more of a young man than an old kid. How does he want to be known to a growing legion of fans, many of them his own age? I'm a friendly person, a nice person. I always want to try to wear a smile on my face. And I enjoy what I do. Pick something you enjoy doing, and it won't feel like work. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.